Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And it is another edition of the Boomer and the Babe Show. Welcome to the Friday, April 13th. 2012 edition, broadcasting from our studios in the Feeding Arizona complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Contact Valley View Community Food Bank via their website at valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. If there's anything you might be interested in donating, time, money, food, they can certainly always welcome and use your charitable donations, and it is a 501c3 corporation. And I'm Pete Peters, and as I say, when Deborah's not here, she's on assignment. So it's nothing very exciting. I think she's just sitting at the other office and working in front of the computer. She's not traveling on assignment, believe me. So I'm sure she'd sooner be here. But she's not here, and we'll have her back again some other shows. I want to remind everybody about what the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is all about. In addition to this radio program, we publish many books and e-books. Our e-book authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network here on Blog Talk. We invite you to listen to them as well. We produce videos for your website. We consult for your business. And we do promotional product work for those of you that need something with your name on it. We are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company. And we also have our latest addition to our family, Boomer Experience Speaks. It's an online publication. And many of our show guests and show hosts are contributors to the publication. We invite you to go to boomerthebabe.com. Sign up for Experience Speaks. It's absolutely free. It'll come to your mailbox once a month, and we're certainly enjoying doing that and passing along additional information to folks that way as well. Well, we have a guest today, and our guest is a gentleman that has written all kinds of books. Comedian Jerry Lewis has said that Alan Klein is a noble and vital force watching over the human condition. Mr. Klein is the world's only jollytologist, and we're going to talk about that. And he's also the author of 17 books that have sold over 500,000 copies. Alan Klein, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me on this Friday the 13th of April.
Is it tripodecaphobia? Is that what it is that... That people, when they have a fear of Friday the 13th, that...
Oh, I never heard of that one.
Yeah,
did you just make that up?
No, I think that's a real thing, trypanosomiasis or something thereabouts. Something like that. But at any rate, so people have that have a fear of Friday the 13th and are staying in bed with a pillow over their heads probably won't be hearing us today anyhow.
I love it.
Well, Alan, I want to get to know you a little bit better, and so do our listeners. So if Deborah were here, she would ask you for your two-minute movie, a little background on your life. And you have a couple of minutes just to kind of ramble on and tell us who and what an Alan Klein really is.
Okay. God, where do I start? First of all, I call myself a jollytologist. And it's a word I made up. I believe you can be whatever you want, whoever you want. And I actually studied humor and have a master's degree in it from St. Mary's College in Winona, Minnesota. It was an external degree. I studied humor for several years, and my supervisor was Dr. William Fry Jr. at Stanford University in California, who was a leading expert on the physiological benefits of humor. And so I do have kind of a degree in humor. And gelos, G-E-L-O-S, is a Greek word meaning laughter. But when I called myself a gelotologist, they thought I made, you know, that dessert. So I changed it to jollytologist. And what is so fascinating to me, because this is, it's actually on the cover of my first book, which came out in 1989. So I've been using that word way before 1989. And since then, a number of my speaker friends call themselves a joyologist, a happyologist, an enthusiologist. It goes on and on and on. So I created this kind of trend, I guess, of ology people. So that's a little about me. I got into the business from what some people might say was a tragic event, and that is my wife passed away at the age of 34.
Oh my.
And we knew she had a terminal illness when she was 31. We discovered that. And so for 3 years, we were both dealing with that. And, you know, that is certainly not a laughing matter, but she had a great sense of humor and continued to use it even during those 3 years. And after she passed away, had a 10-year-old daughter at the time, she, you know, I realized how, looking back, how valuable that little bit of laughter was throughout those 3 years. And it didn't change the situation, but it helped us get through it sometimes. And maybe it was only a couple of seconds of laughter, but it helped us rise above the situation, get a perspective, get a little reprieve from what we were going through. And so after she died, I went back to school to learn about humor and got a master's degree in human development, and not humor, U-H-M-A-N, but my thesis was The Healing Power of Humor, which turned into my first book. So out of the loss came this passion to share with the world about the coping value, the benefits of therapeutic humor. And it was also the same time that Norman Cousins was talking about healing himself with humor in his book, Anatomy of an Illness. And I guess, you know, I guess I was just at the right place at the right time with a passion to share my message with the world. And I almost failed speech in college, so to get up in front of a group and speak was a major thing for me, but I had a passion to share my message that humor could help us get through anything. And so I've been doing that for over 20 years. I used to be a scenic designer at CBS Television for 10 years when I lived in New York City. I now live the other coast, San Francisco. And at CBS, I did such shows as Captain Kangaroo, Merv Griffin, Jackie Gleason Show. But most of that time was spent Captain Kangaroo Show. And you know, I think it's where I get my playful nature that I share with my audiences worldwide in my workshops and keynote speeches. I can go on and on.
Oh, that's fine. No, it's all interesting, and believe me, we'll probably even discuss more of it as our time goes by today. But when you were mentioning the role of humor, and it seems to be more, I don't know, I guess maybe acceptable is the word, to use humor in situations that are somewhat dire. And I'm not talking about gallows humor. I'm talking about, you know, a positive outlook, joking, so on and so forth. And here, where I've seen it, and I've not seen it because I've not been to any funerals lately, but I've seen that at these various memorial services and funerals, that there is this celebration of life, and it's done in great part by telling some anecdotal story or humorous story about the dearly departed. And it all seems to go towards lightening the moment, certainly, but also helping people to understand and feel some relief. Are you seeing what I'm seeing there?
Well, yeah, yes, definitely. And what I'm, what I teach in my programs and write about in my book, particularly my latest book, Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, which has five stages of going from loss to laughter, and we can talk about that. But what I see is that tears and laughter are very close. And yes, it's really important for us to grieve and to mourn the loss of a loved one, but at some point you have to get on with your life. And what I see sometimes, because I used to be a hospice volunteer after my wife died, and what I'd see sometimes is that people would not let go of that loss. And because they wouldn't let go, it kind of stopped their life too. So that from my point of view, two lives were lost, the person that died and the person that was still living but wasn't fully enjoying their life anymore because their loss was getting in their way of doing that. And so, yes, I think that tears and laughter are very close, and I'm not saying we should not cry. What I'm saying is don't ignore the humor, the spontaneous laughter that often comes during a loss. For instance, at funerals sometimes people look in the coffin and go, oh, they never look so good. You know, the person never looks so good lying there all dressed up. And they start to chuckle about that, or they reminisce about something that person said or they did, or and there's the humor. And what I'm saying is don't ignore that. It's there to help us get through that situation. I remember, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that reminds me of that old Bill Cosby skit that was on the records. I don't know. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I vaguely remember. I don't remember what he said, but
it was having to do with just exactly what you were saying, and the people coming by the casket. Then it would trigger a voice that would say, "Hello, welcome to my funeral. Don't I look like myself? Don't I look like myself? I look good, don't I?" there's certain things like that that they have stuck with me over the years. And I hope maybe when it's my time, maybe I'll have the foresight or remember to tell Deborah to put that tape in motion for me.
Yeah, sounds great. I vaguely remember hearing it once. It's probably on the internet, probably easily accessible or YouTube or something.
I'm sure.
Those things happen, and they're part of life. They're part of death. Death is part of life. It's a sad part, but we're resilient people. We go on, and I think the humor helps us. I mean, Viktor Frankl, who was in a concentration camp, talked about every day going in a far-off corner of the concentration camp with another prisoner to joke about another guard or a little crumb that they had for, you know, or the soup or your watery soup, just to lighten up the situation. He actually credits it with, in part, with his survival.
Sure.
And looking for, giving him something to hope for the next day, giving him hope. And he says, you know, the only thing, everything could be taken away from him, which was in the camp. The one thing you still have and we always have is our attitude, how we look at the situation. And he said the humor was something that helped him change his outlook to being a prisoner there. And what's that movie with the father and son in a concentration camp? And it's a foreign movie. It's A Beautiful Life, I think it's called.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you saw that, Pete, but it was the father and son, and the father is trying to change the situation for the son so the son doesn't realize where they are. And so he makes a whole game out of it and a whole play thing out of it. And so he lightens up the situation. So, you know, death and dying situations are not funny, but funny things happen, and we could also, it's our, how do you see it? You know, how do you see that situation? It's really up to the individual.
Well, it is, and I think when, after the person is met their demise, and years later, and I do mean in many cases years, when you talk of that person, you talk of that person in a fond way, and you say, "I remember when she did this,"
mm-hmm.
and it was funnier than hell. I remember when he did that, and it was just hilarious. He had the whole place in stitches, and you remember those things about the individual as time goes by, and as time, as they say, does, I believe, heal some wounds, maybe not all wounds, but
right.
Nonetheless, it gives you a pleasant way of remembering the person, and that is through the laughter and through the humor of whatever that situation was that you're reminiscing about.
Right. When I was writing my another book called The Courage to Laugh, about humor, hope, and healing in the face of death and dying, I interviewed a number of people, and I asked them, how would you want to be remembered? And nearly all of them said, I would want people to remember the happier times we had together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet people sometimes don't do that. But that's often people's wishes.
Yeah, if you're not going to remember the happy times about me, just forget about me. I mean, really, you know,
yeah.
You remember the happy times, remember, hopefully somebody says he was a good father and a good
exactly.
grandfather and so on and so forth and all those wonderful things. But, I mean, the fact that I was sometimes a crotchy old SOB, you don't have to remember that.
Right.
Remember the times that we laughed together, you know, the times we
exactly.
had.
And that's what people want, you know, say they want, and often that doesn't happen, but something to remember that's, you know, and ask yourself, how do you want to be remembered? Or write your own eulogy and see how you want to be remembered.
Right. There's one of our show hosts has his book. It's a workbook about business, basically, but it's evolved into more than that in what they teach and what they and the seminars they hold. And one of the things he says is write your own epitaph.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And as a way of setting your objectives and setting your goals and setting your brand, this isn't business, but he says, write your own epitaph. Start by writing the end.
Yeah,
and
it's a great exercise. It's a wonderful exercise.
Yeah.
The other thing about humor and loss is it gives us power. If you can joke around about the loss, you're getting power over it. You know, you have... Unfortunately, Pete, we're all going to die. I mean, we can't. I don't know anyone that's gotten out of life alive. You know,
that's right.
I mean, even my mother-in-law died last year. She was 50 days away from 100.
Wow.
Pretty old, but at some point, you know, you just can't go on. But the humor, joking about loss and death and dying, helps you rise above it, and gives you the power over it. And there's a brand new, fairly new, it came out in 2010, a book out called The Lighters, The Other Side of Sadness. And in the book, the researchers did a 2-year study of people who lost a loved one. And what they found was those that could find a little bit of humor or laughter right after the loss did so much better over the 2-year period than those that did not.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't put, you know, laughter and loss together. We don't think about that. But here's a long-term, fairly large sampling of people that they studied showing, it doesn't have to be a lot, but a little bit of humor or laughter after the loss was much better mentally for them over the next 2 years.
Yeah, there's nothing that says that in good taste, after the loss, after losing somebody, after mourning, whatever your length of your mourning, and there's nothing that says that you can't retrieve your humor.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's no rule against that.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And again, I think, you know, I'm not saying be frivolous. I'm not saying come into a funeral with a battery of jokes. That may not work, but
yeah.
Look for the natural humor that's just inherent in those kind of very tense, difficult situations, because it will just bop out at know, at a certain point, and you know, don't ignore it.
Yeah, no sense coming in there with cymbal crashes and rim shots.
Right.
That's not really appropriate, I would imagine.
Right. So, you know, what I always say, listen to what's happening around you, and it will just appear. It always does.
Right. This might be a good place for us to discuss what you mentioned earlier, your five stages of from loss to laughter. What are those stages?
Well, the first, they're all L words. The first one is losing. To just acknowledge that you've lost someone and that, you know, they're gone and that you could go on, you know, that it is possible. But just acknowledge that you've lost someone. The second one is learning. I think losing someone could be the greatest teacher. We're really kind of weird individuals, I think, because we don't learn when good things are happening. We learn when not so good things are happening. At least that's what I have found. And so death could be our greatest teacher. We realize that, you know, how precious life is, that maybe we appreciate things more. You know, maybe we get to do stuff that we've never done because we realize that. Robin Williams, who had a heart attack last year or the year before, said, you know, you really, once you had something like that, you really appreciate breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the loss helps us appreciate what we have. So it's losing, learning, and then letting go, because as I said, people just don't let go of the loss. And there's a wonderful Zen story, if I could tell, about letting go, which I really love. And that is, two monks were walking down the road, and they come to a river, and there's a woman standing there wanting to cross. And one of the monks picks the woman up and goes across the river and puts her down, and the monks go on their way. About a mile down the road, one of the monks turns to the other and says, you know, you weren't supposed to pick up a woman. We're supposed to be celibate. You're not supposed to even look at a woman. And the one that picked her up turned to the other and said, you know, I put her down a mile back. Are you still carrying her around with you? And so, you know, how often do we carry stuff around, particularly in loss, that needed to be put back, you know, long time ago so that we can get on with our life? So it's losing, and I'm kind of summarizing this in, you know, 50, 100 words or less. Losing, learning, letting go, and then starting to live again. As I mentioned, you know, if you mourn for too long, two lives are lost. And then finally laughing, finding humor, seeing stuff around that you like. Who's your favorite comedian? Cartoons, going out with people that you enjoy, just starting to live again and laugh again.
And so, it's a process, I imagine, that may take different length of time for different people.
Exactly. You know, and some people, you know, never see the laughter. I remember my wife's grandmother, we went to her home the first time I met her, and her husband had died like 10 years before, my wife's grandfather. But, you know, she was typical Italian, old school, house totally dark. She's still in all black with like a black shawl on her head. It's like mourning forever, you know. It's like, but that was the tradition, you know, in the Italian family, and that's the way she was. So, yes, everyone's different. It'll take different times to start living again, laughing again. But I in the book, I have little quotes and hints of how to start doing that.
Mm-hmm. I want a couple of questions about you seem to be very prolific. I mean, 17 books sold over 500,000 copies. Are they all in the same genre, all about laughter and good humor and so on?
The first one, The Healing Power of Humor, then The Courage to Laugh, which is about humor in death and dying situations, and the latest one, Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, are all in that genre, but then the others are uplifting, motivational, inspirational quotation books.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I love those is because you can just open them and, you know, just read one sentence and be uplifted for the day or motivated for the day. And
which I have the Inspiration for a Lifetime in front of me and Change Your Life, a little book of big ideas.
Right.
And the first one is, of course, Inspiration for a Lifetime, Words of Wisdom, Delight, and Possibility. And I have done just that. I mean, I've looked at the books, and I've looked up, and I said, oh, look at this. Isn't Where There's Life, There's Hope by Terrence. And I went, wow, that's kind of cool. You know, and it's
right.
it's a random page turn, really, in many respects. Or you can
exactly.
you can go in by topic also.
Right. You can just, if you want a topic, you know, for the day or for the month or whatever, you can do that. The interesting thing about me and these books, and as I said, I have seven of them. These are two. There's two more coming out at the end of the year, The Art of Living Joyfully and also Words of Love that will be out for Valentine's Day. But the interesting thing about these books is, at one time, I had a contract, this is with Random House for some other quotation books, to write three books. And by the time I got to the third book, I was getting a little tired of pulling all this together, all these quotes together. And this little voice in my head said, Alan, why don't you write a real book? Go back to writing a real book, like The Healing Power of Humor. Mm-hmm. And then I start getting these letters, Pete, from people about how these quotation books changed their life. One woman, I got a letter, she said, you'll never know how your book has impacted my life. She said she's 67 and that when she was 12 years old, she was raped a couple of times. And that in all these years, she has never told anyone. And that she was full of anger and rage. She said she opened one of the books, the quotation books, read one quote, and she said that has totally changed her life. And the quote was from Dale Carnegie, and I'll read the quote so you'll understand why it changed her life. She said, when we hate our enemies, we are giving them power over us, power over our sleep, our appetites, our blood pressure, our health and happiness. Our enemies would dance with joy if only they knew how they were worrying us and getting even with us. Our hate is not hurting them at all, but our hate is turning our days and nights into a hellish turmoil.
That is very true.
And she said, she put that quote, you know, all over her house, and it just gave her back her power and help her, again, move on with her life and changed her life dramatically. So I just, after I read that, I just start, you know, thinking of more quote books because I realize how valuable those can be for people who might not even read a whole book, but one quote like that could change their life.
There have been people that have said things where in a group of people or whatever that I've been around, and I don't know that there is any attribution other than there probably is somewhere. I mean, I think most everything is probably attributable to somebody originally. If you can do the research, and let's talk about your research in a minute.
Right.
But there's one we were doing a show here. We do a show a couple times a month called Exploring Faith. And I do this show with an Episcopal priest, and he brings the guests, and it's just wonderful conversation, sometimes pretty deep. And he said, and I asked him a question about the church or what, I don't even remember what the question was, I'd have to go back and listen to it. But his answer mm-hmm. was, start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow,
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
pretty cool. You know, that's good advice. No matter whether it's, and I think the question was with regard to the various people in his congregation who may be in various places as far as their belief structures. And he
right.
said,
I
start where we are,
mm-hmm.
use what I have, and we do what we can. And
mm-hmm.
That's a good business thing. That's a good life thing. That's a good everything.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, Pete, why I love short quotes, because words could lift us up or they can bring us down. I mean, we need to be careful what we say to us. I mean, some of these politicians just, I don't want to get into that, but they come up with things that aren't true and then people start believing them and, you know, all to get in office so they get a job. We have to be careful what we say, you know, and again, going back to the death and dying situation, you have to be careful about humor because it could backfire. But words are so powerful. They can lift us up. They can bring us down. They can encourage us. They can discourage us. And that's why I love putting together these books that really help people, motivate them, inspire them.
Let's talk a little bit about the research. I mean, you've got... I've got two books in front of me. I don't know how many pages there are here. One is like 240 pages. Let me look at the other one. It's probably about the same, about 200 pages. There's a lot of quotes in these books. I mean, it's just a number of quotes in these books. And so I guess the question is, where do you find them? What's involved in finding them?
Well, it's not only finding them, but I think the joy of these books is that they're in certain categories, and they're kind of flow from one to the other. So I don't just like go online and find some quotes and put them in a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Inspiration for a Lifetime, for example, has certain categories that I felt would inspire people. So that we write about aging, which, you know, people may not like, or about anger, or about changes or challenges, or life and living, or kids, or money matters, you know, stuff like that. And so once I have a little subheading, say money matters, I will then start researching quotes that I find speak to me, that really interest me. In the 50 or so quotation books, maybe I have even more, I'm looking at my bookshelf, that I've collected over the years. Or today, you know, with the internet, of course, you go on, you put in money quotations, and you will get sites that will have hundreds of those. So there's a couple of challenges. There's one to pick out the really good ones in that category. The other is to arrange them so they make some kind of sense. And the other challenge is to make sure that I'm attributing it to the right person and it's the right quote. Because with the internet, people just post stuff and it's pretty sloppy sometimes. And sometimes I'll find a quote and it's attributed to three different people on three different sites. And so that's where the real research comes in, is finding who said it and if it's accurate. And I often will turn to the library, I love libraries, to do that research, which they do for me, and sometimes they'll come back with 20 pages of citation of why the quote is the way it is and who said it. So it's kind of a challenge, which I love, and it's kind of an interesting little juggling of quotes on a subject, and putting it together in a book, like Change Your Life, a little book of big ideas that makes sense.
And I've got two of these books. Now, how many of these quotation books have you done? You said you've done three.
I've done seven. Some
oh,
of
wow.
them are out of print. My publisher used to be Random House, and now it's Viva Editions, which you have too. You can see the incredibly beautiful covers.
Very nice, very nice.
The Inspiration for Life has this, like, half a seashell in an orange color that's magnificent. And the next one coming out is the Art of Living Joyfully. And that cover, I'm very excited about, has a pinwheel, but each spoke is a different color. Mm-hmm. And so it's playful, it's pleasant to look at, it's joyful, and they really do a great job. I'm really pleased with the Viva Editions. And they're nice, you know, they're incredible gifts.
Right.
For any right. occasion.
Yeah, they obviously are very nice gifts. It's just a pleasant thought that you're giving somebody. Many pleasant thoughts, really. I want to go back for a moment. You had mentioned that the lady that sent you an email with regard to how your books had affected her.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a letter, a handwritten letter that she wrote, yeah.
Okay. That was the Dale Carnegie quote.
Yes.
There must be some others. Can you tell us about some of the others?
How it's helped people? Definitely.
Yes.
One young girl, she was in high school and her dad passed away, and she wrote me a letter. She's very funny. She said, I'm 15 years old, and please don't think that this is a school project. I'm writing this letter on my own. And she said, you know, again, like the other woman, that how, and this book was the Change Your Life book, she said how that's impacted my life. She said, my dad passed away this year. She said, I've been very depressed. And last year for my birthday, he gave me a copy of that book, Change Your Life book. And she said, you know, it wasn't something teenager wanted for her birthday. She said, I just put it by my side of the bed. I never opened it. You know, I thanked him and just put it there. And she said, the other day I picked up the book, opened to a page. There was a quotation there that I could hear his voice saying that to me. And she said, I just kind of thought about it, that quote all day and about my dad. She said, that night I went home and took a photo of him. I put it in that page to mark the page. And she says, every day I open the book, read that quote, think of him, and has slowly started to come out of my depression because of it. And the interesting thing to me, Pete, is the quote is by Ogmandino, who wrote, I think, The Greatest Salesman in the World. And the quote is, I will love the light, for it shows me the way. Yet I will endure the darkness, for it shows me the stars. I will love
Wow.
the light, for it shows me the way. Yet I will endure the darkness, for it shows me the stars. That was the quote that helped her. And what was so amazing to me is that all of this has come full circle, because Ogmandino, who I had met years and years before, was the one who encouraged me to put together my first quotation book and to show to his publisher, which actually did publish it. So it's because of Ogmandino I got started writing or putting together quotation books. And here it's one of his quotes that really inspired this young lady.
It's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many of these types of missives or letters have you received from people?
Oh, God. I have a folder.
Well,
you know, now it's more email. These are actually letters that I get. Every now and then, or an email comes. There's another one here, and I just opened the folder of this woman said that her sister-in-law is 19 and was in jail and was pregnant, and that every day she takes one of my quotes and sends it to her sister. And she says, thanks for providing this book and inspiring so many people. The words you have collected have lifted our family spirits. So she said she got uplifted from it, and her sister does, who's in jail, kind of gets uplifted every day from the quotes. You know, and this is why I do it. It just to help, if it helps one person, then I felt I've accomplished what I wanted to set out to do.
It almost sounds as if you have another book sitting right there in that folder.
I could, yes. In fact, I was on last year, maybe once this year, twice last year. There's a internet, I guess it's a radio show, and she also does the Examiner.com article called Love Letters Live. And talking with her, you know, she interviews you, and then she says, who would you write a love letter to? And then after the show, I started to do this list of all the people in my life for different reasons I would write a love letter. But what really struck me was I would write a love letter. There were several people, people that were kind of very negative in my life that, you know, I did not like. Give you one example. I always wanted to be a scenic designer since I was 7 years old. And I finally grew up, went to high school, got into Yale Drama School to become a scenic designer. And it's a 3-year master's, and I was thrown out after the third year. And I'm sorry, after the first year I was thrown out. It's a 3-year master, thrown out after the first year. And I was told by the head of the department, Donald Owenslager, a famous scenic designer at the time, that I had no talent. And, you know, I was, in my head, I was a scenic designer since 7 years old, and I went to see a Broadway show. So I realized he didn't know what he was talking about, and I went back to school and became a designer at CVS. But he would be someone I would write a letter to thanking him for kicking me out of Yale, because after 3 years, I was designing national TV, and my fellow classmates were still in school doing college productions.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I got to this, telling you all this, but I think words, you know, love letters are so important to, and to thank the negative people in our life too.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that these books are excellent to give as gifts. Also, obviously, through what you were just telling us, that some of the quotes can be pulled out individually and people can use them with friends and relatives or acquaintances. Are there any other, what are some of the other ways possibly that people could use these quotation books?
Well, you can put it on your opening page of your homepage of your, if you have a web page, you can post them, you pull them out and post them on, what is it? Twitter them, or what's the other one? Facebook them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all things like that. You can, you know, as you say, put them in a letter. You can use them in speeches. If you're clergy, you know, you might want to look at these to get some ideas for your Sunday talk. Just like that, you know, people can find their own ways to use them.
And there's a new one now, also, that's not new, but it's certainly just absolutely going, exploding on the social, internet social scene, is Pinterest. You can pin these things, and
you know, I just got an email this morning, and it's the first I've heard of it. Can you tell me, what do you mean pin something?
Deborah is just starting to work on Pinterest and how we're going to use Pinterest in promoting what we do.
Uh-huh.
Basically, I mean, my daughter is on Pinterest all the time. But you have categories. People have categories. Famous favorite recipes, whatever it might be. And you have, mm-hmm. I think it's 5 to 7 categories that you can go through Pinterest and you can look things up. And if you find something and you use it, you can pin it. In other words, put it on your bulletin board, on your pin board. And people that follow you and whatever can repin it. And it can become very viral. And and it's the new hot social media right now is Pinterest.
Wow. I guess I should. I threw it away. I guess I should pull it out of my trash.
Oh yeah,
you need to
check on it. I mean, it's by all that I know, it's pretty cool.
But like I said, I have not done it. Deborah's been studying it, and she says, I'm going to send this to you, and we're going to do this. And you're going to have a board, and I'm going to have a board, and the boomer, the
paper, oh, wow,
board. And I said, well, okay, if that's what we want to do, if that's going to help, you know.
Well, thank you for telling me. You know, what I find these days, though, is because I probably get, I don't know, 150, 200 emails a day. It just, you know, I'm working on another book proposal, and it kind of takes away from my writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I need to publicize. I got to get word out. I love sharing some of my stuff. I'm a reporter now for Examiner.com. I posted an article this morning, but it takes away a lot, you know, answering those emails or looking at stuff like Pinterest, whatever you just said,
right,
posting something on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter it. Or it takes so much time that I've noticed I've been not progressing with the new book proposal.
The one that's making you some money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I need to do it all, but this all is like too much these days.
Yeah, there is a lot. There is a lot. I mean, Deborah and I have a lot of things that we do. She does most of it, and that's primarily the reason that she's not here with me today. But
right.
But nonetheless, there is a lot of stuff to do, and we just keep looking at each other and shaking our heads and saying, we need to get a virtual assistant.
Well, I've had assistants over the years, and I let them go because sometimes I would spend half a day preparing stuff that they need to do when they came to the office.
Well,
so,
it's tough to find somebody that can do it in your voice.
Right.
To do it the way you want to have it done. It's just very, very tough. And then when you
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you find that person, then you can never pay them enough to keep them.
Exactly. But it sounds like I'm complaining. I'm not. It's just a very exciting, rich world with all this new stuff, which all possibilities, which I absolutely love.
It is.
It's just it takes a little more effort to decide what I'm going to say no to, and because my main goal is the next book I'm very excited about. It's called You Can't Ruin My Day. Can't Ruin My Day, and it all came to me because, you know, you wonder how do books come to authors? How did they get these ideas? I got a traffic ticket. And I was on my way to the gym, a quiet Saturday morning on a local street in San Francisco, and all of a sudden there was a cop behind me. Well, what I didn't realize, there was a tunnel I went through, and it was 35 miles an hour going through the tunnel and before it, but when you got out, it changed to 25. And I didn't realize that. And I got the speeding ticket, and I got to the gym, and I was still pretty upbeat and telling everyone I just got my first speeding ticket in my life, and... And they're saying, how come you're not down about this? How come you're not upset? And I went, it just kind of came out of my mouth, you know, I'm not letting that traffic ticket ruin my day. I'm having a great day, and it's not going to get in my way of doing that. And I realized there was a book there of how we give our power away, just like that woman I talked about, and that we can take that power, change our attitude, enjoy what we have, no matter what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so that's how that book came about.
Well, I can see where I have, as I said, I have these two books here in front of me, and I can see how they can be most enjoyable just to have on your bedstand or on your desk or something, and for whatever reason, go through, find a category, and find a quote that can might be able to help you out if you're just generally ticked off at the world or whatever because of the way things are working out for you at that particular moment in time.
Right.
These could very well just help alleviate that problem and give you a different mindset, help you clear your mind a little bit. I think
right.
I think that's a great gift, Alan. I think that's a great gift that you give to people via these books. And I commend
and you know, sometimes young people take things too seriously. Graduations are coming up soon. A book like either Inspiration for a Lifetime or Change Your Life would be an incredible book for a graduate, whether it's high school or college, or just a wonderful little thing that they could have to remind them, which is my goal in life, to remind people to lighten up and to change your life, because you have the power to do that.
Well, that's very true, and the fact is that no matter how bad somebody may think they have it, there is always somebody else that has it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that just is the way it is. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when you think of people that have come back from serving overseas with just literally a portion of what they used to be, because they have appendages missing and whatever else.
Right, right.
Capacities missing. What I might have going this particular day is nothing compared to that. And
mm-hmm.
I think people need to realize that, and I think these books can go a long way towards making that the case.
Well,
a couple more things I'd like to touch on before we wrap this up, because we are kind of getting down to the short rows here. We've talked about why humor is important and how it helps people in therapeutic humor and so on and so forth, but give us some thoughts on, and I know we've touched on this briefly, but yeah, maybe some more of your thoughts with regard to inappropriate humor. I mean, there's all kinds of humor, and there's, of course, inappropriate humor.
Right. Well, my feeling is that if you're of that ethnic background, if you have something in common, if you're that's part of you, then it may be okay to joke about that. Give you one example. I'm almost totally bald. So, and my father was the same. I inherited from him. You cannot tell him he was bald. He would get so upset about it. On the other hand, I joke about it. You know, I'm bald, so I might as well accept it. You know, what is it called? Depreciate, not depreciating
myself.
Self-effacing.
Deprecation.
Deprecation. I could joke a little about it. It helps me lighten up. It helps people around me lighten up. And I tell people I'm a former expert in how to cure baldness. You know, I just, and they laugh at that, and I laugh at it. So, you know, and I'm Jewish. I could talk about funny things about being Jewish. If you're not Jewish and you're saying some things that might be a little on the edge, it might not be appropriate. So
no, I'm not going to get by with it.
No.
A white Anglo-Saxon Protestant fat bald guy is not going to get by with it.
Exactly. And you're not describing yourself, are you?
Oh, no, no. This is the guy sitting next to me looking mad at me
in
the mirror.
Okay. but you get the point, is that, you know, if it's part of your world, it might be okay to joke about it. If it's not, then just stay away from it. It you know, if you're not a blonde woman, don't make dumb blonde jokes. It's not appropriate.
Exactly. It's just a little bit of courtesy thrown in, a little bit of common sense, and a little sensitivity
mm-hmm.
towards the other person.
Exactly.
The last thing I want you to tell us a little bit about is that I have here on my notes that you are a Lifetime Achievement Award winner given by the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. What is that?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. It's an association of several hundred people. I was president of that at one time. We had over 500 people. And there are people who are all interested in humor. Professional speakers, authors like myself, researchers who document what, like I talk about, clergy, teachers who want to introduce more humor in the classroom, and actually reason I'm really glad you brought it up, because next week in Chicago, starting next Thursday, is their annual conference, Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And they bring together all these people from all over the world. We'll have people from Australia come, and they have all these incredible speakers talk about humor, talk about some of it in the personal life, some research. A researcher from Germany is coming, or Switzerland, I forget, he's somewhere there. And it's just like promoting the beneficial therapeutic value of humor, whether in the workplace, whether for health reasons. One of our major sponsors is the Cancer Centers of America, because they totally believe in how humor could help their patients. And it's just a wonderful event that happens every year. People want to know about it, they can go to www.aath.org. That's AA, two first letters, T like in Thomas, H like in Henry, .org.
Very good, very good. Well, let's do another commercial here now while I still have you with me. How can they get hold of you as a speaker, anything else that you're doing, and also your books? How can they get your books?
Okay, well, they can come to my front door and knock. No, no.
That'll
work, sure. I'd love to see people in person. No, actually, you know, the Internet's like my front door, so my website is www. And then my name, just spell it right, allenklein.com. That's www.allenklein.com. If they want to email me, it's humor, H-U-M-O-R, @allenklein.com. My books are on my website. They can go to Amazon, put in my name, and you'll see all the books right there. Or any other Internet book site will have those books. Very simple.
Isn't Amazon wonderful?
Oh, yeah. But they can read about it on my website, too, allenklein.com.
Let me ask you this. Are any of your books in ebook form, or are they all...
Oh, great. The two that you have sitting in front of you are Kindle. Not sure if they're a Nook. I think they are, but I know they're a Kindle. And the latest one, Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, is in the book form, is in Kindle, and is in Nook.
Very good. Very good. Well, Alan, I want to thank you for being a guest with me today. It's been a very enjoyable hour that we spent together. It's a good way to wrap up the week on a very positive note, and I'm certainly glad, especially on Friday the 13th.
Yes.
So we had some good luck on Friday the 13th in talking to you. So
oh, great.
I do appreciate your taking the time. Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate it. Have a great life.
Thanks. You do the same, please.
Okay.
And today we've been talking to Mr. Alan Klein. Mr. Klein is the author of Change Your Life, a little book of big ideas and inspiration for a lifetime, words of wisdom, delight, and possibility. AlanKlein.com, and that's AllenKlein. AlanKlein.com is where you can find the books, and you can also find them on Amazon. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you that conversation with Mr. Klein, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday right here at 10 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. Check us out at boomerandthebabe.com. See everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. And be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll see you on Monday with another great guest. Have a great day.
To the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.